Well, how much is a good teacher worth? In terms of our own education or that of our children, we may say priceless. But in economic terms, the value of a good teacher has a measurable impact that extends far beyond the classroom. Here to discuss the economic value of good teachers is Eric Hanischek. He's the Paul and Jean Hanna Fellow at the Hoover Institute at Stanford University. Dr. Hanischek focuses on economic analysis of education issues. Eric, it's nice to have you. Good morning.
It's wonderful to be here.
Linwood Taheed is also with us. He's an assistant professor of economics at UMKC. Analysis of education is one of his research topics. And Linwood, nice to have you too. Welcome to the show.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
I should just point out that Eric Hanischek speaks on the economic value of teacher quality this evening at the Central Kansas City Public Library branch. The event kicks off with a reception at 6 o'clock. To reserve a seat, go to kclibrary.org. Well, Eric, how much difference does a good teacher end up making?
Well, there are various ways to look at this. The simplest way would be to actually look at the impact that a teacher has on her kids in the classroom and on their future life. And in order to do this, we put together research that has looked at both how good is a good teacher compared to, say, an average teacher, and also if a good teacher boosts the learning and achievement of a student, how much is that worth in the labor market? We actually have good evidence on both of those issues, and if you put them together, you end up with some numbers that sort of really are astounding, that knock your socks off.
Well, give me a sense of that. A good teacher means what in economic terms to a student over the course of his or her lifetime?
Well, I mean, let me talk about the class first. It's easier for me to put it all together.
Okay.
If numbers can't come out right. Say we had a teacher at the 75th percentile, which is pretty good, but not a superstar, but pretty good.
In terms of quality of teaching you're talking about?
In terms of the quality of teaching, we can think of the fact that we can rank order teachers by how effective they are in the classroom and what their impact is on kids. And you take a teacher at the 75th percentile of all the teachers and compare that teacher to an average teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So that teacher gets higher achievement than the average teacher. That higher achievement pays off to individuals in their labor market. And if you had, say, a class of 30 kids with this 75th percentile teacher, you're talking about an impact on the lifetime earnings of students on the order of $500,000 each and every year.
Per kid,
so
you're talking about.
No, this is for the whole class of 30.
For the whole class, okay.
So if I divide that by 30, I get to the answer for each kid. But that's each year that the teacher is teaching compared to just an average teacher. So to me, that means we should really reward and sort of praise and keep our best teachers, because they are really changing what their students look like.
You know, Eric, you rate teachers as below average, average, or above average based on what?
This work is based upon a lot of extensive work on what the teacher adds to the learning of the student. So we've had research over a long period of time now and quite a few studies that do the following conceptual idea. They take a teacher and a class of students and figure out where should the kids be, where would you expect them to be if they just progressed normally, given where they start.
Mm-hmm.
So a kid starts the fourth grade with a certain amount of knowledge. The more knowledge they start, they're going to end up better in general, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what this says is let's try to separate out the influence of family backgrounds, of neighborhoods, of all the other things, and just look at what does the teacher add to this. We now have a lot of different studies that are pretty consistent in saying that there is a big difference between the top teachers, 75 percentile or above, and the bottom teachers. And so what I've been talking about is how much difference does it make for the achievement of the students in a class at the end of the fourth grade compared to where they started from having a good or a bad teacher.
Eric, let me bring Linwood Tawheed into our conversation again. He's with UMKC's professor of economics. When you hear this, Linwood, what do you make of it? Is it possible to sort out these factors in the way that Eric is talking about?
Well, I think the general premise here is that education leads to greater earnings, right? And I don't think there's any controversy about that. We would expect that to occur. There's also an idea that the economy itself will benefit from having a greater, better educated students. And I don't think there's any controversy with that. But there is some controversy in this. And I think that one of the areas of controversy is how we do measure quality of teachers. And what Eric is proposing is that we use test scores. And in particular, that we use test scores that come out of what are called value-added systems. We want to know what a particular teacher adds to the educational process for a student. And I'm not so sure that that is that we can make the leap from just single test scores into understanding what that tells us about educational performance. I agree that we should assess our students. You know, we have to have some way, as teachers, we have to have some way of knowing whether our students know the things that we want them to know. Whether they do so or not, maybe because of issues with them, we can talk about those, or issues with the teacher. But it also may be because of issues in the system of education in which they find themselves. So we can talk about that. But I agree with the idea of assessment and including value-added assessments. How we use those to distinguish the upper 75% of teachers from the lower 25, I guess it's the upper 25 from the lower 25% of teachers, is where the devil in the
distinguishing
details.
Good teachers from maybe not so good teachers.
Right. And what do we do in terms of policy?
Yeah.
If we assess teachers and as being exceptional or exceptionally bad or good, and how do we use the system? How do we structure the system so that we can improve the quality of teachers?
You know, Eric, I'm struck by, you know, some of your own writing. You acknowledge there are other factors out there besides teacher quality that wind up affecting student achievement. I'm thinking about things like student motivation and family and peer support, curriculum changes, investment in technology but you don't add those into the equation here. Is that because you can't measure them or convert them to a mathematical value?
No, I don't think it's so much that as the fact that we have lots of information from the past performance of students that gives us a good indication of which are the most motivated, which have parents that are the most helpful or least helpful, and that once you take into account where the kids were in the past, you have much of the information about all of these other things. Now, it's not perfect, as Linwood points out. There are controversies, but most of the controversy is not about the estimation or identification of how different teachers are, as I've been doing. Most of the controversy is about how you might use that in policy in the policy realm.
But Eric, just so I understand, though, these factors that I just ticked off, those are fairly significant and important factors in how a student learns. If you can't measure those, what does that say about the ultimate value of trying to measure how you do wind up measuring the value of a teacher? The effectiveness of a teacher.
Important. There's no doubt that those are absolutely important, and that leads to the wide differences in the overall achievement level of kids. What we're doing here is something that's actually much simpler than that. It's looking at how much does the achievement of a student grow in a year, and is that dependent upon what particular classroom they're in? As an example, long ago, and what got me sort of really pushed into this whole area is I did a study of students in Gary, Indiana. They were all black students. They were all poor students in the Gary, Indiana schools. And when you looked at in detail at kids that were in different classrooms, you could find that in one classroom or group of classrooms where you had really good teachers, you know, at the top of the teacher distribution, they were getting a year and a half worth of learning every academic year out of their kids, on average. You know, there are variations in there, but on average, a year and a half of learning. Then you look next door at a bottom teacher, and the bottom teacher is getting half a year of learning every academic year. The implication is that by this assignment process, however it's done, whether random or purposeful, kids put in one classroom at the end of the year can end up a year more of learning because they were in the right classroom. And that's what this is all based on. Mm-hmm. And so, as Linwood correctly points out, there's a lot of controversy about how you would use these scores and what other information you would combine with it if you wanted to make personnel decisions. But what I was trying to do here at the beginning is not talk about what we might do with this information. I'm just saying here is the best estimate of the impacts of having a good teacher on kids, and the numbers are very large.
Linwood,
to me, that suggests that we ought to do something.
Linwood, weigh in here, and I'm wondering about the practical implications here and just how valuable this information might be, at least from your standpoint.
Well, you know, the educational assessment over the years, let's say since the early 60s, has kind of gone through phases of initially feeling that teachers made no difference, that the outside world was all that was important, to, you know, where we are now in kind of saying that, that teachers are very important.
Mm-hmm.
And I would agree. I take the position that you know, education is occurring for the things that we want students to learn in the classroom with a teacher. And so if students are not learning in the classroom, it's because they've not been taught. But it may not be because they've not been taught by that teacher. Education is a cumulative process. And so students who need to do things in a 10th grade chemistry class who can't read because they've been, you know, didn't have the opportunity or to learn to read well by third grade, you know, where do you assess the value of that 10th grade chemistry teacher's performance? And I think there's a kind of a systematic problem that needs to be addressed here. We're talking about value added, what a teacher in a classroom adds to a student's performance.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if we look, we find, for example, that students, the further they progress in school, the further they are behind on average. And so, you know, your kindergarten student is coming out of maybe a preschool. They're not very far behind. Once they get to ninth grade, for example, average students in poorly performing schools are performing at the fourth or fifth grade level, and it accumulates from there.
Mm-hmm.
And so what that tells me is that the teachers of ninth graders have students who don't have the necessarily scaffolding, the prerequisites to benefit from that class.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to assign the value of to that teacher when the value really is distributed throughout that student's past life is very difficult to do. But I do agree with Eric that, you know, there are teachers who know how to overcome these deficiencies.
Mm-hmm.
And they are your superior teachers. And there are teachers who don't know how to do that because I believe they've never been taught how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, we might use testing to identify teachers who don't have the teaching style or technique or the knowledge to overcome the deficiency in their students. And what we do with that in terms of policy, do we implement systems of remediation, if you will, or do we use that to try to find better teachers, you know, by perhaps firing these teachers, getting rid of them? You know, that's all policy. But I think we have a systemic problem because it's not on any particular teacher here to be either a good teacher or a bad teacher. It's part of the way we teach in general.
If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking about the economic value of good teachers. We're visiting with a couple of terrific experts here. Eric Hanasek, he's at the Hoover Institute at Stanford University. Linwood Taheed, who's with UMKC. Eric, what about Linwood's point there, this notion that, you know, by the time a student reaches the ninth grade, there might be all kinds of deficiencies, and yet we're educational deficiencies, and yet we're evaluating that teacher based on his or her ability to overcome this enormous hurdle and comparing that teacher to other teachers who may not be in such a difficult environment. What about that?
Well, he's bringing up a very legitimate point. It turns out that early learning is very important. So what you learn in early grades has an impact on later learning. Now, most of the analysis that I was talking about that is used to get economic value of good teachers actually is for elementary and middle school grades and not high school. And there's a good argument that, in general, we don't know how to deal with kids that come with a fourth-grade education at the 10th grade. We don't know how to do that very well. But that's not what we're talking about here. What we're really talking about is in earlier grades, and we know that there are teachers that, not all teachers, but good teachers that know how to deal with kids who are 2 years behind in reading level and how to bring them up. They might not fully overcome the 2 years that they're behind, but we're giving them credit for the fact that they have a tough job, and then we're going to assess what are they adding, and do they add a year and a quarter to the kid so that the kid's still behind, but in fact is ahead of the average teacher. That's what we're talking about.
Eric, you proposed what you called a thought experiment here. You asked this question, what would happen if the very lowest performing teachers could be replaced by just average teachers? You looked at K through 12 achievement, and for the sake of this experiment, you compared the U.S. with high-ranking countries like Canada and Finland. What did you conclude? And I'm wondering how many teachers would have to be replaced to do all this?
Well, turns out that by all the estimates we have, there is a small proportion of our teaching staff that's really harming kids.
What percentage of teachers, roughly, would you say?
Well, the estimates I have, it's rather continuous. It's not a cutoff that this teacher's okay and that teacher's bad. It's rather continuous. But the experiment that I did, given what we know about the distribution of teacher quality that we've talked about earlier, is that replace the bottom 1-3% of the teachers with an average teacher, not a superstar, but an average teacher. If you replace 5-8% of your teachers with an average teacher, the U.S. Achievement level could be somewhere around the level of Canada, which it turns out is quite a bit ahead of us. And by information that we have on the economic value of higher achievement, if there's an impact on U.S. growth of higher achievement, from that you could estimate that the value of future economic growth of getting to Canada is on the order of $70 trillion. We have a $16 or $17 trillion total GDP today, so we're talking about something that's on the order of five times our current GDP if we could get up to the level of Canada for all of our students. So this relates back to this small number of kids that are harming kids, a small number of teachers that are harming kids. And why it's so large is that think about having one harmful teacher out of 12 years. It's like the kid lost a year of schooling.
Linwood, how sustainable would that replacement rate of 5-7% be? Because I'm thinking that as you replace the lowest performing teachers with average one, you would continue to raise the average until the bar is set so high you'd run into trouble finding replacements to meet the standard.
You're talking about the Lake Wobegon effect, you know, all of our teachers are above average. Yeah, I think the thought experiment that Eric is running here, I think is, an interesting as a thought experiment. I don't disagree with the logic. But what happens, particularly when economists run these kind of thought experiments, is that policymakers begin to think that it's just that simple.
Yeah.
And they're going to, try to implement or put into place some kind of law or policy to get that done. And you know, the comparison to Canada or Finland in terms of just their scores, and Eric is talking about international assessments compared to ours and so forth, it runs into some difficulty for me because the U.S. is not Finland and the U.S. is not Canada.
Right.
Not just because they have better test scores, but because they have other social systems that are part of that support their economy and are part of their economy. We're talking about systems in which if people lose their jobs, they're not necessarily going to be afraid of becoming destitute. In Finland, if someone, you know, loses a job because of some structural issues, you know, they can go and get retraining and move on to other careers.
Right.
And so as policymakers, I'm not saying Eric is suggesting this, but if policymakers take an approach of just identifying replacing the lowest 5 to 7% of teachers, that becomes based on some high stakes testing, mm-hmm. some testing of their students. That creates a system, another problem in the organization of education, because it creates fear among teachers. And we see the result of that with, for example, No Child Left Behind, inducing teachers to cheat on standardized tests. Mm-hmm. We have an example of that, notorious example of that in Atlanta, mm-hmm. where now, you know, teachers have been sent to jail because they've cheated. That creates an atmosphere of fear within education. And, you know, before I became an academic, I was an entrepreneur. I ran my company according to, principles of W. Edwards Deming, management consultant. One of his principles was you have to drive fear out of the organization. Mm. If you bring fear into the organization, it paralyzes people. They can't do their best, even if they're capable of doing it.
Yeah. Eric, just one final question. What about the idea of just retraining these low-performing teachers and improving their performance to achieve some of the ends that you're describing here?
So that's a great idea that people like in general. The problem is that all of the evidence we have on retraining or professional development suggests that it, on average, doesn't work. Huh. It can work for some people, but not for others, and we don't know how to organize it in a way that we can take teachers that aren't very good and bring them up to average teachers in any way. And so what Linwood points out is absolutely true. We have not worked out what policies might be and how you do this in a way that doesn't have harmful side effects and so forth. My point is much simpler than that. I have views on that, but that's not what I want to talk about here. What I want to talk about is that the impacts of good and bad teachers are so large compared to any of the other things we think about in terms of policy, that we have to start addressing those issues. And some of the choices we make in policy may be wrong, as Linwood points out, but we have to experiment with different alternatives. We have to take it seriously. If we just sit back and say, oh, yeah, I know that teacher shouldn't be there, but what can we do? We are going to end up in a bad position as a country.
Eric Hanasek speaks on the economic value of teacher quality this evening at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library, the Central Branch, 14 West 10th Street. To reserve a seat, go to kclibrary.org. Again, Eric Hanasek is the Paul and Jean Hanna Fellow at the Hoover Institute out at Sanford. Eric, thank you very much for your time. I sure appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Linwood Taheed is an associate professor of economics at UMKC. Thanks very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.